Some of you have heard the story of Elizabeth and I about 20 years ago when we were going to go on a trip, a tour to the Reformation countries of Europe and some of those great sites that I'd spent so much time thinking and talking about heroes of the faith that were significant to me. And so we set off, and the first place we were going to land was in the Czech Republic. It was an adventurous trip right from the very beginning. We flew into Heathrow in London, and there was a wildcat strike. Everything was tied up. Lines were everywhere. Finally finagled a way to get onto a plane to France and spent the night sleeping in the airport there with a couple of others. Managed to get another flight into Prague the next morning. Finally landed, got there, relieved that we were there, and with great anticipation walked up to the immigration desk that let us in. Elizabeth stepped up first and handed in her passport and whatever else was required, and the man looked at it for a minute and said, "No good, entry denied." What? I walked up then. Obviously, there was a mistake here. No good. Entry denied. Canada. Need visa for Czech Republic. Nobody told us. No matter. Visa denied or entry denied. Well, they finally sent us over to another person who, he had kind of courtesy that was probably trained in him when he learned that the Soviet Union still ran the Czech Republic. So we walked up, handed our documents, and we said, "We're on a tour. We're only going to be here for a couple of days. No matter. Visa denied." But we're on a tour. No matter. Visa denied. And after about four or five visas, what are we supposed to do? Don't care. Visa denied. Go find flight somewhere. And we walked back in thinking of Tom Hanks in the movie, the Terminal, that we were going to be there, because I asked, "Can I go out and buy a ticket or do something?" And the word came, "No, you can't go out there." But finally they relented and allowed me to go out under escort. Elizabeth was not allowed to leave. And we went out, managed to get a ticket. The tour people came up and we flew into slips my mind right at the present time, Leipzig, and we caught the tour there the next day. But it was one of those moments when you think, these Americans we traveled with, they're allowed in. We look like them. We sound like them, sort of. Dress like them. We live among them. Didn't matter. I didn't have the visa that was required, and no matter what, I thought of myself, I didn't have what I needed. Now, not getting to see Prague was a disappointment. But all I could think of, because preachers think this way, is what would it be to stand at the gate of heaven and hear entrance denied? Don't have the visa that's required. You don't have what you need. One thing to be disappointed, but that would be disastrous. And it's a reminder of what we talk about when we talk about the gospel. We're not talking about trivial things. We're talking about central things. And the passage this morning opens a door to understanding. What is required? What do I do? What do I have to have so I can enter into God's presence? And so let's turn to Genesis chapter 15. It's been called a monumental chapter in the Bible. We're going to take two Sundays to walk our way through this part of the story of Abraham. But the passage we're going to look at this morning has been called the passage that lit the fires of the Reformation for Martin Luther and for all of those who are around and still resonate deeply. So, Genesis chapter 15 and verse 1. By the way, I should say, for those of you who are joining us, we're walking our way through the life story of Abraham at this particular point. And so we read, after these things, the word of Yahweh, the Lord, came to Abram in a vision. Fear not, Abram, I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. But Abram said, Oh, Yahweh God, what will you give me? I continue childless. The heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, Behold, you've given me no offspring, and a member of my household will be my heir. And behold, the word of Yahweh came to him. Man shall not be your heir. Your very own son, actually, the son from your own body, shall be your heir. And he brought him out aside and said, Look toward the heavens, number the stars, if you are able to number them. And he said to him, So shall your offspring be. And he believed Yahweh. And he counted it to him as righteousness. In the Hebrew language, six words. But the power of them is one of the central truths of the New Testament. Abraham is uniquely linked to God. In Isaiah, God calls him my friend. And he's called the friend of God in a couple of other places. It's a unique relationship that God had had with Abraham. But it's usually been in the form of God appearing. He appeared to Abraham back in chapter 12 and verses 1 to 3 and said, Go to the land that I'll show you and I'll make you a great nation. And through you, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. And Abraham had gone. Left everything he knew in Ur of the Chaldees, made his way to Haran, and then down into what we know as Israel, the promised land, promised by God. And when he got there in Genesis chapter 12, verse 7, the Lord appeared to him and said, I'll give this land to you. And then in chapter 13, verses 14 to 18, God had appeared to him again and told him that he was going to receive the land. Abram had become prosperous. He'd done a number of different things. He faithfully served the Lord. Oh, there were some serious blotches, especially down in Egypt. But chapter 14 is a highlight in his life. His nephew, Lot, has been captured by an invasion of four major armies from the east. They overwhelmed the various kings of that particular area in the Jordan Valley and between Jordan and Israel today. And they'd taken Lot and they'd taken him as hostage away, heading back all their way to Mesopotamia. And when Abraham heard, he immediately gathered his men, got his local allies, and took off after them, 120 miles chasing them until finally in a night attack, a surprise attack by night, he rescued his nephew and defeated those kings and took back the bounty. And he comes back in chapter 13 as a conquering hero, a mysterious priest, Melchizedek by name, from the town of Salem, comes out and blesses him in the name of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. And the king of Sodom comes to him almost saying, Come, let's make a deal. And Abram says, I won't have anything to do with you. I follow God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. So it's kind of strange to hear verse 1, after these things, God appears to him in a vision and says, Don't be afraid. You wouldn't think that fear would be an issue for Abram, but when God says that, and he says it often, perhaps 60 times in the Bible, we have God saying to somebody, Don't be afraid. But Abram's just won a great victory. Something, well, maybe he was afraid that those kings were going to come back and take refuge. Maybe he was thinking that he just made a dumb financial deal by turning around the bounty he could have had. But there's no indication in the text. But God's writing something deeper in his heart. Despite all that has happened and all that God has done, Abram is wrestling with doubt, of discouragement, of wondering how this was all going to work out. Don't be afraid, Abram. I am your shield. That's a defensive weapon, obviously, to block arrows, to block fiery darts, to block a sword, to block stones or whatever they throw. It's the combat vest that police and soldiers put on when they go into different places. It's the security system. It's God saying, I'm there to bounce off anything that's dangerous, anything that endangers you. I'm your shield. It's a term that God uses to describe or is used for God in several places in the Old Testament. Listen to Psalm 28. The Lord is my strength and my shield. In him my heart trusts, and I am helped. My heart exults, and with my song I give thanks to him. The Lord is the strength of his people. He's the saving refuge of his anointed. Fear not. I am with you. Don't be afraid. I will help you. I'll strengthen you, help you, uphold you with my righteous right hand. We sang that when we sang how firm a foundation. Don't be afraid. I'm your shield. And I'm your very great reward. Not entirely sure what that says. Some versions read it, I'm your very great reward. Others read, and you will have a very great reward. Perhaps it's both together. Yahweh himself, God himself, is the reward of Abram. He's the one on whom he can depend. But he's also going to reward him. The writer of Hebrews says he looked for a city whose builder and maker is God. But Abram responds in a most striking way. What are you going to give me since I don't have a son? There's two things that are bothering Abram. The second one we're going to see in verses 7 and 8. Listen to him in verses 7 and 8. He says to the Lord in that context, I'm the Lord your broad, I'm the Lord who brought you out of the Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to possess. And he said, oh Lord God, how do I know I'm going to possess it? It's been 10 years. 10 years since you told me that back in Ur. I've oriented my whole life. You promised me two main things, a son who would give me offspring and a land in which I could possess. And here his issue is that second one. That was the big one. The land, that was important. But a son, that's where his passion was. That's where his longing was, to have a son to carry on his name, a son who would be the reason to fulfill his. What are you going to give me? I don't have a son. And Abram's disappointed with God. It's interesting that that's not uncommon in the Bible, of God's men being disappointed with him. Turn to Moses and you read through the life of Moses and all the ups and downs and his courage and bravery and leading the people out of the land. And then you come to Numbers 11 and all of a sudden he's arguing with God. Just stop this. Kill me now. I can't take these people anymore. And you're not doing anything to deal with it. Or you think of David. Think of all the lament psalms in the Psalms. David pouring out his heart to the Lord despite all that God has done. Or think most of all of Elijah. Elijah has been on Mount Carmel and see God set that sacrifice on fire and deal with the pagan priests, look right in the eye of Ahab and have no fear whatsoever. But then he hears a rumor that Queen Jezebel's after him, and he runs for his life, fearful. Or you think of Paul. Paul, the great, courageous hero, but in 2 Corinthians, he talks about how God, who comforts the depressed, comforted us by the coming of Titus. John Bunyan talked about it as the slough of despond, that place when everything goes wrong. Or Charles Spurgeon wrote about the fact that the strong are not always strong, the wise are not always ready, the brave are not always courageous, and the joyous are not always happy. Don't be afraid, Abram. This is the first time Abram has heard God speak that he's answered back. And all of chapter 15 is a conversation, back and forth. God will say something, Abraham will say something, God will speak, Abraham will speak. But when he speaks in verse 2, it's brusque, it's abrupt, in the presence of God. And he's at a low point in his spiritual experience. And some of us can know that in our life. He trusts God. He could say, I've raised my hand to Yahweh, Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth, at the end of chapter 14. And where's my son? I didn't come all this way from Ur so that Eliezer, my chief servant, would get all my inheritance and all my possessions. I want my son. And God speaks without a rebuke, without a judgment, without any, as my father had the reason to say to me, don't talk to me like that.